Gundam. As always, I am your build host, Zach, and join with me is the computer one.
Zach.
And the other computer one.
Steven.
I'm the only one without a computer.
Fucking nerd.
What's a computer?
I'm a computer.
Stop the downloading.
Much about computers.
Yeah, I was looking at Gunpla before I came downstairs. I was like, if I just buy everyone Gunpla for Christmas.
Yeah, I thought you already like tried to break yourself last night about this.
Yeah, like, I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, I don't have a problem yet.
I already bought three.
I only have two.
But you bought three more, didn't you?
No, I didn't buy any last night.
But what about the night before?
No, I didn't buy any.
I thought you did.
No, I only bought some on Black Friday.
I think we were just looking at him and talking about him.
Yeah.
With Brandon.
Yeah. Brandon was the one who bought five.
I know. But I thought you already bought some, as in like the general scheme of you already bought some.
No.
Yeah. He bought two.
Just the ones on Black Friday. Yeah.
Yes. Those are the ones I'm fucking talking about.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to that.
No, I'm not. I'm just talking about in general. You already bought some this week.
Yeah. If I didn't buy any online.
Oh my God.
Look, Barnes & Noble has a limited selection of
things. I'm making a general statement about you buying them, and you're saying, no, I didn't buy them. I only bought them on Black Friday.
Because that happened in the past.
I'm feeling a lot of judgment from that side of the table.
Oh, my God.
So if I were to get you Gunpla for Christmas, what, like, series would you enjoy?
I'd say Unicorn, probably. That was the one you
that was the last one you watched.
Yeah.
Unicorn or something from
I like
Seed,
Double O
maybe,
a lot.
Double O.
Double O's good until the movie, and then the movie just makes it weird.
The movie's great up until the last 15 minutes.
The movies introduce the Quanta Gundam. Come on.
Don't get me wrong. I love all the fucking action in the movies. It's just when it gets into the alien part, this is like.
But it's
okay.
The first series that actually acknowledges that there's aliens.
Sure.
Like, that's so cool. And
but
then,
they're like space sentient. Like almost godlike aliens.
Yeah.
They're just energy.
And then there's the alleged season 3 that may come out. I'm really excited for that, but there's also the stage play. They all look great.
Like in Japan.
I just can't wait until like they reveal like the almost Power Rangers-esque cardboard costumes for the Gundams.
No, they're gonna be like Digimon where it's the CG on the screen behind them.
Oh.
That'd be even weirder. Or it's like AR or something. You have to have a headset to watch it.
I'm in.
I am Gundam.
I won't lie. There were many moments where I almost bought a VR headset just so I could finally play Beat Saber since they were all on sale.
I thought about getting a PSVR also.
I'm like, oh, the Rift is only $350.
Brandon was saying that he has a Vive and he actually had to beef up his computer just to.
Well, I have a 1080 Ti, so.
So does he.
Really? You have to
beef up? Plays a lot of things on low graphics for the rest of his computer to keep up.
Really?
Yeah.
People have been running VR headsets with like 960s though.
Probably,
it's like a 4-year-old card. I don't know.
Anyways, I really want to buy more Gunpla. It's like when we went to Barnes & Noble on Black Friday, Kayla went off to go look at books, and I just came back with like three boxes, and I put one back, and she was like, but why? This was like a really old hobby for me. Like, I used to do this back in middle school and high school, so I kind of miss just sitting down doing puzzles
and
whatnot.
It's very cathartic.
Yeah.
We buzzed out the Zero Maru. I was jealous.
Yeah.
Because our Barnes & Noble ain't got jack shit.
Well, they restocked, so they have a couple more Diverse stuff, but they also have the new stuff from Narrative. So, like, one thing. It's the Unicorn 3, the gold one. Unicorn Destroy 3? I don't remember.
Is that from the, like, redone series?
No. Or? It's brand new. It's from the same series as, it's that one.
That one's been out for a little bit.
Well, I mean, our Barnes & Noble just got it.
Right.
And they also have the Omegamon Gunpla, so.
Well, and they have Dragon Ball Z models, too, and I was like, ooh, I could get a Broly right now. Yeah. But he's $55.
And they have the Master Grade Sanaju. They did have a 00 Quanti for a while, and then I was kind of waiting. just to see if it would still be there.
I have a real grade on my Amazon list to buy eventually.
Yeah. So yeah, I was thinking about just doing, because if I do this Black Friday Cyber Monday deal, if I spend about $100, I get free shipping. So
it's what, like 3 to 4 Gunpla?
Well, I have 4 in my cart already. I'm at 50.
Yeah, it depends on the high grades are only about 15 to 20, really? Depending on the.
I always thought they were much more expensive.
Master grades can go anywhere between like 50 and 100, and there's like 2 out there that are perfect grades that are like $300 a piece.
There's also the metal ones. Like the entire thing is just made out of sheet metal. Jeez. And you put it together and it's just so cool.
I have sheet metal, die cast metal.
Yeah. Anyways.
The heavy shit.
You
could kill a man with shit. It. Not that you would.
Yeah, I mean,
not that I did.
Other than that, I've been thinking about Gunpla. I finally finished one person's chapter 4 quest in Octopath. I did Cyrus's. And I figured out how to cheese the game even harder than I already had.
Have you faced any of the advanced job bosses yet?
Yes.
Which ones?
I did the sorcerer one.
Okay, that one's not too bad.
And then I'm on the next one, and like I said, I figured out how to cheese it by giving everyone saving grace and then just having Ophelia heal anytime anyone takes damage. Everyone has like 7,000 HP at all times.
It's one way to do it.
I just never take damage. I just move on.
You kids and your Octopath.
So, there's that. I thought I did everyone's chapter 3. Turns out I didn't do Ophelia's yet. So I'm going to go knock hers out
in between playing Pokemon Eevee.
Yeah.
Pokemon Eevee's really fun. Like,
but I just want to get Pikachu so I can make him a handsome little boy.
I mean, I caught Pikachu.
Yeah, but can you make him a handsome little boy? No, you got a stupid Eevee.
Yeah, because Eevee's better.
Yeah,
I found the perfect tweet relating to this.
Yes, I saw that.
Is it the one where it's like, I respect your decisions and everything you do to the Eevee players? Fuck Pikachu, he's a little bitch.
Yeah, Rit Nelson on Twitter. Let's go, Pikachu players. I really care about Pikachu. Have since I was a kid. But I respect your decision to choose Eevee. I have a girl Pikachu. You can tell because her heart has a tail. Her tail has a heart. Heart emoji. Let's go, Eevee players. I would like it on the record that Pikachu is a little bitch. Also, found a great tweet. Ladies, if he always leaves you on red, never comments on your Instagram posts, stands on a hill of swords, chants in an ominous yet questionable English, is constantly trying to kill his high school self, he's not your man. He's the heroic spirit, Counter Garden, Emiya.
I thought it was going to be the Rutherford B. Hayes one.
No. Steve and I also watched about half the season's worth of Yuki Yuna as a Hero. And that show's great. I love magical girls.
You have a minor obsession with them.
It's either magical girls or giant mechs or idol shows. That's the only anime I watch. That's it. Nothing else.
And yet, you still haven't watched Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
One of the quintessential mech anime.
Because Gundam and Madoka. And Yuki Yuna is Madoka Light.
I made the point last night of, has like every last or most recent magical girl show, except from Cardcaptor Sakura, been like a deconstruction, like, oh fuck, everything's terrible.
There's a few, like Glitter Force is pretty tame.
I guess Magical Girl Ore is kind of
pure. And Magical Girl Ore combines everything. It's an idol show and magical girls. Like, yeah.
Again, you have a minor obsession.
It's not even minor. It's just like a massive hard-on for it. Anyways.
You said, and I quote, yeah, I want to buy statues of these, but I don't want to be that guy who buys waifus.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy.
Says the man who has a waifu as his lock screen.
I just think it's funny. All right, moving on to actual discussion topics. Julie Andrews has been revealed to be in the Aquaman movie.
In a secret role.
It's not really secret if they reveal what she's playing.
But they didn't say what she was playing.
Yeah, in the movie. They did. As reported by Entertainment Weekly, veteran actress and Oscar-winning Julie Andrews, best known for Mary Poppins and Sound of Music, has boarded DC's upcoming Aquatic Avengers or Adventures, not Avengers. Andrews will lend her voice to the mythical sea creature known as Carathan, who is described as being an essential figure in Aquaman's quest to unite Atlantis in the surface world. We wanted Carathan to have the voice of a classic British actress, alibi somewhat digitally altered, said producer Peter Safran.
It's an awfully specific request.
And then we found out Julie was interested and available and excited to do it. Casting her was a no-brainer.
I fucking love Aquaman. You're hired.
Aquaman is set to have the go-ahead, or going head-to-head against Mary Poppins Returns in the box office, which is kind of funny. And Mary Poppins Returns also has an underwater sequence, apparently.
Oh, my God.
She was approached to make an appearance in the new Poppins film, but ultimately declined, as she wants the audience's undivided attention to be on Emily Blunt's new interpretation of the classic character.
But Mary Poppins...
Safran went on to go to say that who knew that Aquaman would have the real Mary Poppins this Christmas. So it's pretty entertaining there.
Do you think Arthur's going to come talk to her? Like, there's one thing you need to remember, Arthur. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
See, I'm already imagining her to have like the weird wavy AI kind of voice, like a synthy kind of.
The warble in it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, she's supposed to be a sea creature, so...
Either a sea goddess. I want her to be a kraken. Carathan the Kraken. Keeps up the alliteration.
Yeah. This is just like the most out of left field thing. And also, I can't tell if like it's the most PR statement or it's just like, yeah, we hit up Julie Andrews and she said, yeah,
I think it's another thing just to get people hyped, because I know Aquaman like completely rolled Venom over in pre-sale tickets. And that's according to Adam tickets, the new,
isn't it Fandango?
No, Adam's the new thing.
Is it?
Yeah. It's the one with, what's her face from Scary Movie?
Anna Faris.
Yeah. It was Anna Faris in the commercial. Yeah. I don't know. Also fun fact I learned, David Ayer actually comments about this on Twitter, was that, you know, the blobby monsters in Suicide Squad?
Yes.
They were supposed to be parademons. And the original final boss was supposed to be Steppenwolf, who was brainwashing Enchantress the entire time.
Is he just like coming? I can't tell if he's like backtracking, like trying to make.
I think he's just grieving his errances. Because
it just
like.
Seems weird. Like,
you mean
it's done. Airing
his grievances.
Like, sorry. Nobody's gonna. Like, people have made up their minds about the movie at this point.
Well, he even, like. A lot of that film too, he was like, yeah, the entire Joker side plot should have taken that out. And he was just kind of saying, because someone released concept art that like, shows the parademons and shows what would have been Steppenwolf in his film, but he's like, yeah, after Justice League started production, we were told not to do that, so we had to
think that would have
twist
been
our own story
a layer even too far for them,
like, having the Suicide Squad go against Apocalypse.
Well, like, to have the whole Enchantress plot then all of a sudden be like, yeah, no, there's another boss, Steppenwolf, who
I mean, at least it makes more sense in the grand scheme of things.
But it's like, he was mind-controlling her, who took over her body, but this guy was being controlled by Mandalore to get her, because she was controlling her. It's like, there's so much, just one bad guy.
Fair point.
And it would have been, like, the final fight would have been against Steppenwolf and Diablo at that point. So, giant tiki god versus Steppenwolf. Would have been interesting.
I don't know if anything could have saved the way that movie's plot was structured, really.
Well, you know, you got James Gunn coming in. And Margot Robbie actually just posted on Instagram the Birds of Prey script. Yeah. And it's called Birds of Prey and the Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
The Fabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
And that's the actual subtitle of the film, apparently.
Yep.
It's just like, what? Okay.
So it'll be interesting, to say the least. I'm
Fingers
glad
crossed?
Production has started on, or not even production, that they're actually about to like start. It's like one of the few.
I wonder if they're trying to wait on like what this, because everyone's like, oh yeah, Superman, Batman, they're done. We're just gonna hard reset again. It's like, are we just gonna wait and make this part of the hard reset? Is this gonna be like its own thing? What's going on here?
I think they're just gonna bravely charge forward at this point.
Who knows?
If Aquaman and Shazam do well, then I think we get to move on with life. And then if Wonder Woman does well, we have our new Trinity.
Yeah, I mean,
and Steve Trevor's alive for whatever reason.
I mean, right now we have no reason to believe Wonder Woman 2 is going to be bad.
No. Patty Jenkins based off the awesome first job. One. Alrighty. Continuing forward, speaking of trailers and awesome things, The Lion King, quote unquote, live action trailer has been released, or at least a teaser of it.
I mean, I get why everybody calls it the live action, because that's easier to explain, but there's not a single person in that movie. It is all CG animals.
Yeah, I think it's just that everyone saw Jon Favreau do Jungle Book, and they're like, okay, Jungle Book was live action in the sense that there was one actual one person in that film.
Well, and I can also see it being called live action because
it's just easier to explain.
Well, and all of the setting, like the background and everything, most of that is live action film.
Is it?
Granted, they didn't find somewhere that looks exactly like Pride Rock out in the African savannah, but I'm pretty sure most of it is film, and then they put the CG over it.
It just seems weird, but
you do also have live people doing the motion capture.
True.
It's in the vein of like Andy Serkis and
yeah,
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's like fair.
It's just shorthand instead of saying, yeah, it's the CG but also live action combination movie. No, it's just live action, whatever.
Just
why don't we just call it a movie? Man, I can't wait to have a weird bathroom break as soon as the wildebeests pop up. I'm just gonna walk away.
That it's gonna be weird when I suddenly get a phone call and have to cower in the lobby for about 10 minutes while
Dad?
That adorable little lion cub has to tell Mufasa to wake up.
Yeah, come on, Dad.
I'm curious if it's literally going to be a 1-to-1 recreation because
as close
the teaser,
as can be.
The teaser, like somebody did the comparison, and it is a 1-to-1 comparison from the original movie.
So this little MF-er is gonna tell Mufasa to get up, and y'all expect me to not cry. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Thank you, World Star Hip Hop.
There is one thing, and it's gonna be the most nitpicky bullshit thing ever. But this is my favorite Disney movie, so I'm reserving the right to be nitpicky as fuck. Rafiki doesn't bust some plants open. No, it's a gourd. He cracks that thing, gets the fruit inside, and then does the mark on Simba's head. Not some weird little dust plant.
Well, I mean, maybe the dust plant's actually like more realistic in that vein. I don't know. I love the fact that Rafiki just holds up Simba on Pride Rock, and it's just like, behold,
he's
top of the food
you.
Chain. One of you will die.
Bow down to him, for he shall eat you.
It is a very weird complex.
Yeah, even though he becomes like, what, a pestitarian, just eats insects with Timon and Pumbaa. Like, he doesn't become a full predator. Insectivore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or his diet is all insects.
It'll be interesting.
Although we never really learned what happened to the rest of the animal kingdom after Scar took over.
Yeah.
We just know the lions are starving. So if they're starving, what the fuck happened to everyone else?
Yeah,
everyone
like,
pieced
who's
the fuck out. Full scorched earth, just take over, destroy everything, run away.
No, scorched earth was the end where at the final battle.
We already know it's not going to be a 1-to-1 because aren't they not doing Be Prepared?
Yeah, they're not doing
the Nazi chant.
Are they doing the songs?
I don't think they are. I think they said they're not going to.
Because I know,
at the very least, I want Hakuna Matata, and I just can't wait to be king.
Like, I know with the live action Mulan.
Wow.
That's not going to have most of the musical numbers.
I don't know if they've confirmed if Lion King's having.
Or, Aladdin's also coming out. Aladdin's in some shit right now. I don't know if you guys saw.
I've been seeing
over who's the cast for Jasmine.
No. The director is anti-vaxxer.
Oh,
and he also said using the term anti-vax is just as bad as calling someone the N-word. And it's just he typed out the N-word on Twitter.
What the fuck?
Like, you know.
Okay, so they're only going to use four songs from the original.
Circle of Life, Hakuna Matata.
Let's see. Okay, so the four they're going to use.
Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
Can You Feel the Love Tonight, Hakuna Matata, I Just Can't Wait to Be King, Circle of Life.
Cool. That's the only ones that matter.
That's all I need.
Yep.
I don't care about, like, while Jeremy Irons singing Be Prepared was amazing.
Four most important songs out of the entire soundtrack.
Well,
my Be Prepared is a close fifth up there just because of how cool the song is, despite the imagery.
Think about it, though. How many songs are actually in Lion King?
Like five or six.
So,
those four and Be Prepared.
It's like,
and
how,
then there's renditions of the others, just like, all right, we're going to take the instrumental from Circle of Life and tone it down.
It's more than Avengers 4 had. Or 3.
They had musical numbers. That's all I'm thinking. 3.
Off their soundtrack. They literally just played the one theme over and over.
Slow down in the minor key.
Not even slowed down. Like, I think in the credits, it's literally just the one track.
Well, no, in the credits, it's nothing. It's like because it's Thanos will return. It's like, oh, fuck this shit.
I mean, the actual rolling credits.
Yeah. Yeah, it bums me out because I know, like, in the Mulan film, they may or may not do To Be a Man.
See, that's just
like
blasphemy.
The only song that anyone cares about.
That is, but I could see it being used against the movie because you listen to it. By today's standards, it is a kind of sexist song.
A bit, but in the same way, like, they got rid of Shang because it's like, we're creating a brand new male character because, Shang can't be gay looking at Mulan or anything in the vein.
Look, if anything, Shang was bisexual.
Yeah.
He had feelings about a man. He's like, this feels kind of weird. What do I do about it? Oh, wait, woman, we're cool. Now you still have feelings for a dude.
And even then, it's still like, that's a tricky slope. But speaking of the Aladdin thing, Terry Rossio. So this weekend, he used Twitter. My heart goes out to all the parents of vaccine damaged children who have to not only endure the sadness of their loss, but also the vitriol of ill-informed and insensitive people such as those here. Anti-vax is the equivalent to calling someone a, says the N-word, and makes as little sense.
But you go ahead and
just why? You never need to say any of this.
But you go ahead and you apologize to your kid in the future when
they have polio.
Their life is ruined because they've had polio. They've had the mumps. You apologize to your daughter when she gets cancer because you didn't believe in the HPV vaccine. You go ahead, but nah, you feel bad for the healthy kids.
He was one of the writers on Shrek.
Yeah.
That
was another movie that he was a writer for.
Pirates of the Caribbean. He was a writer on most of those films.
I actually cared about. Oh.
Shrek.
How could you not care about Shrek? Come on.
Shrek is life.
Even though everyone incorrectly says that All-Star was from Shrek, fuck no. Mystery Men. Dane Cook was the Waffler.
I just have Hallelujah from Shrek. Just at what point did like every film in the early 2000s just decide Smash Mouth? Doesn't matter what movie it is. Smash Mouth is somewhere in their soundtrack.
I mean, do you remember the movie where like Tim Allen was a superhero Zoom and he recruited like the young kids to fight his brother?
No.
No? Oh, it had the best version of Smash Mouth singing Under Pressure.
Wait, are you talking about Daddy Daycare?
No, it was Zoom. No. It was called Zoom. Tim Allen was a retired superhero who used to be part of a super team. But then shit got fucked up. He retired. But then his brother came back who was a villain. They had to recruit kids who had superpowers to help him fight his brother.
The fuck?
And during the training montage, they had Smash Mouth singing.
Never heard of this movie.
Oh my god. It was such a good movie. It was stupid, but it was such a good movie.
And that qualifies a lot of movies now. Like, I blew your guys' minds by saying the twist and Thank You, or Sorry to Bother You.
You know, like, I did not, what? It's like, that's not what I expected from that movie at all.
Yeah, like, none of the trailers allude to it, and then just 3/4 of the way through the film, there it is.
There you go.
It's like, yeah. And I don't want to say it just because I don't want to give that spoiler away to anyone else, but
a pretty big plot twist there.
Yeah, go watch Sorry to Bother You. It's on Hulu right now. It's fucking amazing. What's Steve doing?
What?
I don't know.
Alrighty. Moving forward. Something called Kingdom Hearts 3 has gone gold.
It's happening.
You're so close.
The game is done other than the possible 60 gig update.
Again. Shut your whore mouth.
Yeah, I didn't realize when they said they wrapped production, that meant they had gone gold. Like, yeah. It was actually confirmed.
It's on a disc.
It's somewhere it's on a disc being produced.
And they're ready to ship it out.
If at 10 p.m. on the 28th of January?
Yes.
If it pops up with a 60 gig update, I will come and strangle you in your sleep.
There'll be some sort of day one patch. Guaranteed.
Right, but if it pops up saying, this needs a 60 gig patch.
So if it's 61, I'm good.
No, anything over 60, you're going to get strangled.
59.95 is fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Did you say Jeopardy rules?
I don't know Jeopardy
rules. Fucking right. Price is Right rules. Close to the number without going over.
I've never watched either. I play them.
How did you never watch Price is Right?
Not even once.
When you're homesick, that was the show, man.
I watched the one episode with Adam D. from Killswitch Engage. He won. He got a car.
It's where Jesse Pinkman got his start. He was a contestant on The Price is Right.
Huh. Okay, yeah. Cool. So,
Steve's dream is soon to be a reality.
Did you know there's two Hot Topic exclusive Soras?
Yeah, there's the Toy Story one and the Night Before Christmas one.
Yeah, I was at Hot Topic today.
I have both of them ordered on the way.
Yeah, I was gonna...
Those fuckers canceled my Voltron pop, though. Assholes.
How dare corporate.
They said it was in stock, and then I get an email like, ooh, RB, it was out of stock, we canceled that part of your order.
Like, why can't you put it on back
order? So the buy two, get one free, they're not giving you the one free one?
Either that, or they're refunding me the Voltron, just charging for the one. I don't know, It said, like, we're going to credit your account, the refund, and whatever, and I haven't actually checked yet, but...
Yeah, I was at Hot Topic, and they also have, like, a shit ton of Elrond pops, and I'm just like, man, no one likes Elrond.
Like...
Elrond's a badass.
Elrond Hubbard?
Elrond from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry. I'm just sitting there looking at all the pops today because
I didn't know they made a pop of the founder of Scientology. That's a bold choice, Funko.
After my meeting that we had at Starbucks, I just went around and did a lot of Pokemon Go, and I had to duck into a couple stores just to feel my fingers again.
Did you happen to see any Aizawa exclusives?
I did not.
Aizawa has exclusives?
Yeah, it's him using his quirk.
He has the goggles on.
Goggles on, hair up.
Are his eyes red?
You can't see it because of the goggles.
Oh. Smokes way too much weed for his eyes not to be red. I just realized why he's so tired, because he's up all night fighting crime. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, he's like a stealth hero.
So alrighty.
He worked at night.
Have they ever explained how his whips work? It's like, we get the quirkless part, but...
That's the running joke of his new car. Like, I don't know how you do that. I don't either.
It's a secondary quirk. Just like,
who knows? Either that or Best Genius made it. It's got some Best Genius.
Do you ever imagine all those poor quirkless people that just haven't had the right moments to actually like environment? It's like, oh man, I'm quirkless, but suddenly they're underwater and they can breathe fire, or they're in space and they can shoot water out of their fingers.
Hold on, let's dissect that first one. They're underwater and they can breathe fire.
Yeah, think about how cool that quirk would be. It's not practical, and they would never know. Because maybe they don't go swimming. They're quirkless otherwise.
Well, no, because if they have the joint in their pinky toe,
all right,
then they're quirkless.
That's how they explained it.
Yeah, that was their explanation.
I forgot the first
episode. That's how we know your son will never have a quirk. It's because he's got that extra joint in his pinky toe, the unnecessary joint. Because let's be real, when have you ever really bent that joint and be like, oh, that's useful?
Clearly, you've never lived in a Filipino household.
No, I know how you pick shit up with your toes. I do that all the time. You mainly use the big toe and the second toe, get it in between, you kind of claw it. But do you ever use the pinky toe, really?
I'm trying to find something to pick up, but it's just not worth it. All right.
Go ahead and try.
Okay, so we do have a really abbreviated episode just because there's jack shit. After Stan Lee died, a lot of people are just like, nope, no news. Marvel's rolling out their Stan Lee in memoriam comic covers, and it's just a little black strip at the top of the comic that says Stan Lee, his date, his year of birth and year of death. And I'm like, man, I would love this on my Spider-Man 12 or Exiles 11, which shows everyone being exterminated.
God,
this is great.
I hope they do something like towards, well, I can't say towards the end of the year because we're towards the end of the year, but sometime soon, that it's just like a big annual of In Memoriam for him. Like, have the current creators or even just other creators do something for her.
Oh, like react to it.
Yeah, or like just something.
Like write stories inspired by him. Or even like the things he taught us.
Like the Superman 80-year
thing. Yeah.
That came out with Action 1000. That'd be cool too.
Batman 1's coming out soon too. It's going to be giant, oversized issue. And, you know, the hardcover book. Bums me out. Scott Snyder's not on the list of creators on that, which is ridiculous to me.
A little shocking, but
Action 1000?
No, Detective 1000.
Yeah, Detective. That's the one I meant.
It's a little weird that he's not.
He got his start on Detective Comics. He wrote Black Mirror.
Well, and he wrote one of the best runs of Batman.
Yeah. Maybe he'll be on Batman 1000.
Maybe. Yeah, that's what they're saying for.
What if there is a twist of, like, there is a story of Scott Snyder just in the middle of it.
Yeah.
No one expected.
It's like a the Love is Love graphic novel where it's like Jonathan Hickman's on here and it's just like his weird vector art.
Yeah. It's like a one page thing.
Cool. Thanks, Hickman.
Got a card up.
All right. So the next thing is Fantastic Beasts. Steve, you're the only one that saw it. Kayla did not want to go.
Okay.
I can kind of see it's been a very divided movie.
Yeah. It's a...
people either love it or they're hating it.
And it's and I would say it's all hardcore Harry Potter fans that are on this line of loving or hating it.
I personally loved it. I will say it is a lot. Like a lot of lore. Fantastic and Beasts exposition.
And the crimes of too many subplots.
There were a lot of subplots.
I personally don't want to see it because of if we talk about spoilers, I'll mention what I saw on Twitter.
How long has it been out?
We'll do it's 2 weeks now.
It's been 2 weeks since Bare Naked Ladies.
We can throw a little talk about that in spoilers, but
Goku is there. So is the Bare Naked Ladies.
Everyone did pretty much have their own subplot. Like, it started off with just like two plots, and then that kind of branched from there. And then it's Newt and Jacob going to see Tina and Queenie. And then from there, it's, all right, now Jacob and Queenie have their own subplot going off while Newt and Tina have their own subplot. Meanwhile, over here with Credence, and meanwhile over here with Grindelwald. And look, Dumbledore's over here too, which I will say, Jude Law did a great job as a young Dumbledore.
Yeah, I can see it. Jude Law's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I like Jude Law. I think most people's issues with it is the fact that Johnny Depp was cast still.
I think my biggest issue is that J.K. Rowling is doing the one thing I hate that they do in comic books, is that she's going back and retconning things and adding new things that are, like, literally groundbreaking, but it's like you're doing it in the worst way possible. It's the same vein of her, well, like
what George Lucas
here's
did.
All of... I might defend George Lucas, but...
No, I can't defend George Lucas because he stopped giving a shit around the prequels. Like, that's I'm going to retcon this because I've thought of these ideas and I want to change it up.
Fuck it.
He didn't give a shit, and then they had these ideas.
But, like, I feel like J.K. Rowling is trying her best right now is to be like, look, I can do representation. Because... And, like, the lead up to the original Fantastic Beasts, I really didn't think about it this way. But it's like... Here's our four schools in America with the Nomad or the ministry and everything. And they're all named after these Native American spiritual birds and whatnot. By the way, a bunch of white people started these schools and took all these Native American spirit birds and magical creatures. It wasn't even like the indigenous people that started the schools. It was the British ministry that came over and did it.
God.
Like, what does that mean for the rest of the world? Or, again...
Can't wait to see the Indian schools.
No, there's only, like, one other school in, like, Asia or something that we haven't seen yet. But it's, like, So, can I say the big spoiler that I want to?
Yeah, let's go into spoilers now, so there'll be timestamps for when spoilers are over.
So, I think the biggest piece of bullshit that, again, it just upsets me on a level that, like, I love and adore Harry Potter, but I hate the revisionist idea that's going in. So, Credence is revealed to be a Dumbledore. He is Albus's brother. So there's a fourth Dumbledore child walking around in the time of this film.
You know, it's pretty fucking groundbreaking considering we've never heard about this guy in the books or any of the original
movies. Dumbledore's
gay
3 months after the book came out.
There's a but it makes sense why we never heard about this mysterious
Dumbledore. He's
like, he was taken away as a baby. So if, let's say, Dumbledore was away.
It's a cop out.
But it's not a cop out. It explains.
It's a plot device to introduce this character.
Would you just rather, though, that they be like, yeah, no, there was a fourth one all along. They
or
just
he
never
could be a new
about
character.
Yeah, he doesn't. I feel like that's the better way to go about it.
Like, again, it's.
But have you seen the finale of this whole setup to explain why he has to be a Dumbledore?
I ended up reading the plot like a really,
but,
really
detailed
thing.
Not just the second one, the whole Fantastic Beasts series.
Yes.
No. As like, in. All the movies that are going to come out, as in two movies that have not been made yet, to explain why he
and
makes
that's
sense
fair.
That he's a Dumbledore.
Again, it's the but it's J.K. Rowling's problem of she's going back and adding in information later that
so she can never change her story ever.
No, she can, but it's in the vein of like there's information that was never alluded to in the books. There's information like again, you don't have to mention them in the books. Or you don't need to mention them in the movies or in the films. But this is the problem with prequels is like, okay, by 1990 whatever, Voldemort is around, Harry is around, and this whole slew of characters other than Newt is ended and their stories are over. But it's the – again, I just have complicated feelings about it because it's – it's my same problem with comic books. It's like, okay, we're going back. Hey, there's been this secret character all along. You know what? Carol Danvers, your mother is actually Kree. And that's why you have powers. And in a vein, it's like, oh, cool. She's not been granted her powers by Mar-Vell anymore.
Space machine explosion.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't owe your powers to a man anymore. But it's like, so you're telling me in all of Carol's history, her mother is a Kree and this was never explained up until now. Or in the vein of like, okay, there's the fourth Dumbledore child.
The Captain Marvel thing, I think it's mostly like nobody gave a shit up until that point.
Yeah. And again, every time there's been new information about like the world of Harry Potter since the last book, there's been some sort of, not necessarily outrage, but there's always been people looking at this in a real critical lens. And J.K. Rowling kind of like using it to defend her own actions or her own ideas on a personal level rather than like in this fictional world, this is the things that are going on. Even Cursed Child, it's like, ooh, that's, there's a lot of stuff in Cursed Child that people were really upset with or against just because it's like, okay, this doesn't necessarily fit my vision of Harry Potter or things along those lines. And like I said, Fantastic Beasts, I had wanted to see it, but at the same time, it's like, in this five-film franchise, am I really invested? I like Newt, and I like Tina. And then it's like, but are they enough to get me through these films when I have so many other problems with this new revisionist idea going in?
I think the biggest issue that I've been noticing with pretty much every franchise that tries to do a prequel is they always have to find a way to tie it back to the originals. And sometimes they focus so much on that. Like, we got to tie it back to Dumbledore and Grindelwald. It's like, oh, we've heard about what they did back in their past. We got to tie it all back into this.
See, that's like, what I would have liked.
You're like pretty much boxing themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, we got to have it all tie back to the original story.
And again, that's the thing. It's like, I would have loved for this just to be its own standalone thing. I would have loved for Newt just to go dick around. But it's like, BT Dubs, Grindelwald. It's like, okay, cool. Grindelwald's going to be the final climactic character. And I understand this film builds up like hey, this is Wizard Hitler, and we're building up to him going full on Wizard Hitler. Like, some of the characters that are like, oh, you're such great characters in the first film, join his side. It's like, okay, I can see why you did that. But how is a lot of this other stuff building up? And again, like Steve said, you're completely right. This is a longer film franchise, and I have to sit on it and wait on it. But there's so many things, like the Nagini thing still kind of bothers me, or Credence being another Dumbledore bothers me, because it's like, these can be just their own characters. They don't have to be established characters or related to established characters. Dude, throw in Charles Potter and have him run around and just be like, hey, okay, cool, there we go. But it's like, just adding all these different things that are outside of the original lore. I don't know. It's the same argument with the prequels.
I don't even know if it's outside the original lore, because we...
Yeah, it was never really established, I guess.
The beginning of the lore that we got involving the character specifically, not like the founding of the houses or the founding of this place. The characters in the books, the furthest back we go is Tom Riddle at Hogwarts.
True.
We also have the Marauders. They have their own flashback stories in the film or in the books.
But even then, that doesn't go that back that far.
No, it's like
there's so much that has to, like, that can be set up before that of how did we get to this point? Like, I can understand like the Nagini thing that seems kind of thrown in there, but I feel like that will be explained over time. The whole reason that Credence is a Dumbledore, that will be explained over time. Like, if they just at the last movie, if it's just there was absolutely no reason that he had to be a Dumbledore, then yeah, that plotline is bullshit. But I feel like, hopefully, like I'm hoping that there is a tie-in for everything. Like, you were in spoilers, so yeah. Queenie yeah. joining...
Wizard Hitler.
Yeah, Grindelwald. It makes sense because she... Like, they explain why Jacob still has memories of the wizarding world.
Queenie brain. Him.
No, it's because the mind wipe only affects bad memories, and to him, he didn't have that many bad memories mm-hmm. of that time. Mm-hmm. So Queenie just filled in the rest, but he still remembered everything else.
Well,
about
she
the
charmed
wizard.
Him too.
Well, yeah, she charmed him to agree to marry her.
Quick,
because he knew what would happen if back then if she married a nomadge, which is essentially
is that what they're calling Muggles
nomadge? In America. Yeah, in America, they're no magics, but they abbreviate
yeah,
it to no
sure.
magics.
Yeah, but sure, just call them fucking muggles.
It's
why?
Again, it's the concept of having just like, just all across the board.
Is that okay? But quick side note, since we're already in spoiler territory, is that whole Grindelwald's whole stance is that magic users should be more free. Powerful?
No, they're not more powerful. The way he puts it out there is that. Wizards should not have to hide themselves, but that does not make muggles and nomadges lesser than them.
Interesting.
They should be equal, but wizards should feel free to not have to hide who they are.
Sorry, Wizard Hitler's Voldemort. That's my bad.
Okay.
Because he went around killing people willy-nilly because he believed magic.
Yeah, I was going to say, Grindelwald doesn't sound that bad.
Grindelwald was more of like the extremist piece. For
him. Okay. But okay, what's the counter argument then of like why they're hiding? Like, are they afraid they're going to be like?
It's fear that
they're going to be used or something, or
if
you're fucking magic.
Well, Salem witch trials.
Okay.
When people thought there were witches out there, they burned them at the stake. So it's we need to hide our magic.
Are they still worried about it in the '20s.
They still worry about it in the '90s yeah. when Harry Potter takes place.
That's why Harry gets punished for using his magic in front of people. You have to hide magic. People fear what they don't understand, but yeah, Queenie joins Grindelwald because Jacob won't marry her because of the rules of wizards can't marry nomadges. They'll be punished. So she buys into Grindelwald's thing of if we're equal, you can marry who you want. You can love who you want. You can be with
and the American ministry is actually way more hardcore than the British ministry. And that's what they've shown throughout the films. Like
they straight up obliviate anyone who's ever seen magic.
Which is the first film. It was like
the rainstorm coming down was a giant obliviation spell.
Huh. Interesting.
I don't know. Like I still feel weird that they're
calling it Fantastic Beasts when it seems like it's pretty low on the Fantastic
Beasts.
Nah, dude,
Chupacabra's in the film.
Is it really?
Yeah. A Niffler. You can buy a giant one at Target, and it's the life-sized one.
I will say that being the Fantastic Beasts, they do a great job when it comes to the beasts themselves. Like, showing off all of these mythical creatures from not just...
I remember when the first movie was just all these beasts got loose in America. We got to go grab them back up.
No, he was trying to save them.
Well, save them.
Well, they just gonna release them. They do.
Suitcase. Yeah,
they do even explain why. Like, yes, Newt went to America first for the Thunderbird to release it back into its natural habitat, but they explain that it was Dumbledore who told him about the bird to help him get the bird, and then told him, you know, go release it in America, knowing exactly that Newt would be there when he needs to. Like, it's that Dumbledore, I'm setting the pieces in play, you don't know everything yet, though. Which Jude Law, it's again, like, did a good job of kind of, like, setting that up of, like, I know more than you think I know. The only thing that I find strange is the Lestrange family. Because they talk about, I can't remember her name, Newt's
love interest. As dating his brother.
Yeah. She's actually going to marry his brother. And, like, they set up this whole thing. Like, that's the whole thought going through the movie, is that Credence isn't a Dumbledore. He's the prophesized child from the Lestrange family. That everyone thought he was dead, but he's actually alive, and he's going to bring about this great movement for the wizard race. But he's straight up dead. And so I kept thinking, like, all right, where are they going to tie, like, Bellatrix into this? And they kill the only Lestrange in the movie. Like,
huh.
Straight up roast her. I'm like...
And it's, like, in the original canon of the seven books, the Lestrange family, straight up, like, they're all dark wizards. But it's like, here's the one nice one, and she dies.
Well, no, because they even play into that of, while she's going to school, she is, like, the rebel, because everyone has this negative image of the Lestrange family. And it partially stemmed from the rumor that she killed her brother, which she actually turned out she did.
Yeah, I think, if anything, I don't know, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I should give it a chance and go watch it, but I just have no motivation to.
I would say at this point for you, wait until the other movies come out.
I think...
Like, get the whole plot as one, just so...
Yeah.
Anything that pops up, be like, what the fuck is that? Hopefully it gets wrapped up in that last movie that you're like, I get it now.
I don't know. The seven original books are, like, gold. The short story with the Marauders, still pretty great. Hufflepuff's masturbating in the common room. That's where it gets weird for me. And then again, it's the whole, I don't know. I have a hard time. It's the same thing with, like, Orson Scott Card. I have lovely memories of Ender's Game and all of those books.
And then you learn about the guy.
Orson Scott Card's an asshole, and then you read the books again through that same lens. It's like, shit, he's presenting all of his ideas through these books also.
It also makes me wonder, if you're looking at Fantastic Beasts through that lens of the seven books are gold, because let's be real, there are flaws in Harry Potter.
Blasphemy. I'm kidding.
But could it be that you looking at the books, like, this is a miraculous series... Could that be hurting your viewpoint of Fantastic Beasts?
I love the original Star Wars films, and I still think the prequels have good merits. I like the new Star Wars films. I gave Solo a chance and enjoyed myself. So, I would consider myself a bigger Star Wars nerd than a lot of other things. And I don't think that same lens is hurting Harry Potter in that sense. I don't know.
You said you gave Solo a chance.
Yeah, and I'll give Fantastic Beasts a chance when it comes out on Blu-ray or DVD or Netflix. I'm not going to spend money on it right now. There's so many other things to watch. Like, oh god, did we talk about Robin Hood?
Briefly.
Man, that movie was garbage.
Did you actually watch it?
Huh?
Did you watch it? Read the Wikipedia summary?
No, I watched it. When? I went with a coworker during one of my days off.
When? You never talked about it beforehand.
Yeah, because I wanted to save it, because it was just going to be like this whole blast. So the end of the film, It's just off the rails. I can't wait for the next. It's literally Batman. Like, the politician character that wants to overthrow the king gets his face burnt, and then he becomes the new sheriff, and the sheriff hates vigilantes. It's literally Two-Face. It's amazing. It's popcorn. It's a popcorn film. But yeah, sorry. It's all good.
Okay.
Creed 2, also in theaters. Waiting for Zach to watch Creed 1.
No.
You're just never home.
I know.
We were supposed to watch it this past Friday.
Yeah, that was the original plan.
What happened? We just never get around to it?
Siege.
Yeah.
We could have stopped at any time.
No, we couldn't have.
Yeah, that was my win streak.
Yeah. Well, and we watched something briefly, and you went upstairs to say, I'm going to play Siege. And then Brandon eventually got on, and then we played until like 9:30. Right.
Yeah, Siege was great.
So you started everything.
Yeah, that's my fault. I don't know.
Okay.
All right, Wreck-It Ralph 2. We'll do lights or no spoilers just because it's super recent.
And there's not really a lot. It's not a deep, rich plot that you could spoil much.
The entire film is about overcoming your insecurities, and it's
a meta movie about overcoming insecurities.
That, which is very relevant with the age of the internet.
They made a movie about the internet for all ages, which in today's day and age, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto's in the... Slaughter Race. Which is the Grand Theft Auto clone.
Ah.
It's great. Gal Gadot, just like...
So fantastic.
She's awesome. I heard someone in the theater is like, this is why I'm gay. I'm like, yeah, good for you.
Explore your sexuality through a Disney movie.
It's not even, you know, Gal Gadot playing character. It's just Gal Gadot. It's her face wearing a leather jacket. And it's just like, that's Wonder Woman. But she's in Grand Theft Auto.
Which I will say, goddamn the hair physics that they've got.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the whole time, like, not just Pocahontas and her waving hair with the unknown wind source, but...
it's just constantly going.
But, like, Gal Gadot, like, every movement that Gal Gadot's character had, the hair moved perfectly with it. Even Vanellope's, like, ponytail. Just...
So, this is a Disney animation film, not a Pixar film.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they refer to Merida as being from the other studio.
Yeah. So, I think that's really cool because it's, like, the combined force, almost. Like, everyone... The animation was really smooth, and at one point, the end boss is a bunch of moving parts, and even when they do the zoom out to, like, this King Kong-esque figure, you can see all of the moving parts keep on moving.
Yeah, it's like you can... There's, like, small movements that you can see, and you're like, oh, God, that...
It's really unsettling.
It reminds you that it's like, yeah, no, this is something that's made up of a bunch of things.
They got that 3D animation down.
Yeah. Ever since they acquired Pixar and got their engine... in-house.
Yeah.
They've been killing it.
Yeah. And
now, you know, I have to know, was I right in that the Disney princess scene is only like 5 minutes long?
Well, it's on YouTube and it's 5 minutes long, but they come back.
Yeah, there's a couple points where they come back and they're the best part of the whole movie.
Like, in the trailer that everyone got hyped over, it's like, oh, did a man come and save you and everything? Oh, you are one of us. Yeah. And the climax of the film is Ralph is in danger, and they just go, look, a man who's in the need of saving. And it's literally the best action
scene ever.
The Disney princesses literally sold the entire movie. Like, some of the Ralph parts were like, again, it's a movie about the internet and it's references everywhere. There's a purple building, YouTube, everything. There's a character named Yas.
Google is the biggest building in the whole internet.
And Ralph makes a joke. It's like, oh, if we need goggles,
they have a whole eBay's building.
There. Amazon is there. But it's like, it's a movie about the internet, but it almost seems as if the parts that weren't related to Ralph almost made the movie better. In a small way. Like, the Ralph and Vanellope thing, that, you know, that's the crux of the film. Mm-hmm. But, like, when the two characters get to explore outside of each other, which is the entire point of that film, it's so largely better. Like, Vanellope running away from stormtroopers, and then she stumbles upon the princesses, or Stan Lee being there. It's just like, ooh. There's a lot. And the directors even said they had to cut out their favorite cameo, which would have been the Golden Girls.
Oh my gosh.
And I do love how they personified the internet. Like, there was a whole scene about them taking a which Disney princess would be your best friend. And the whole time it's like a game show host.
Oh my gosh.
Hosting it. Like, what would be this? Oh, and your best friend would be this princess.
And then she comes out from behind.
Yeah, it's like the curtain opens and it's Snow White there.
Or Twitter is literal birds tweeting.
Like birds flying to a tree. Chirping. And then they chirp bubbles. And once something pops up and then all the birds chirp that for retweets.
Yeah. Like, it's a fun film. And I mean, largely, again, the overall theme is just overcoming your own insecurities and embracing change. But, like, the new supporting characters of the film really sold it. Like, Felix and
Jane Lynch's character.
Calhoun kind of played really background parts.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they were very minor bit parts that kind of helped very slightly set up the plot, but they weren't instrumental in it.
Yeah, but, like, characters like Yas and maybe Gal Gadot's character with all the ones from, like,
Shank, that's her name.
Yeah, Shank and everyone else from Slaughter Race. And even the Disney princesses. Like, I just want a Disney princess team-up movie in the vein of Avengers, or, like, just do a bunch of internet shorts.
There were so many, like, little Easter eggs in, like, the casual Disney princess scene. Like, yeah. On Moana's shirt, it had hashtag shiny.
Cinderella has got to go with a carriage on it. Nap Queen was Aurora. Merida has the bear on her shirt. Snow White
had the poison apple that had poison above it, which is the ultimate power move.
Even like the newer, and I think it was really jarring originally just to have all the Disney princesses be there and have ears. A lot of them did not have ears in their original version.
That's the thing, like when you look at Cinderella and you're like, why does this look wrong? And you look at like a drawing from, or a scene from Cinderella, she has no ears. The way they draw it, it's tucked behind her hair, and you don't actually realize it until you're like, wait. Hold on. She's got ears here. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, but, and it's really cool because they got a lot of the original voice actresses, the ones that are still around.
Pretty much everyone but Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty, and maybe Belle.
Belle was different. Or no. Belle was different in the 2D animation straight home to home videos because her actress was deemed too old to be Belle, but they brought Belle back.
So I think then it was Snow White, Cinderella, and Aurora, who they had different voice actors, but all the other princesses were their original ones. Like Mulan was Ming-Na Wen, Anna and Elsa were Kristen Bell and Idina Menzel, Mandy Moore was Rapunzel.
But Idina Menzel was only the singing voice.
No, she was speaking and singing.
Okay. What am I thinking? Because there's a different version of Let It Go. With a Vanessa Hudgens, right?
No, Demi Lovato.
Demi Lovato did a cover of Let It Go for like the DVD special features.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, the film was a lot of fun. And like a lot of the other supporting characters came back. Zangief has a... yes. It's like the book club scene. They're like, in a book club and they're reading Dostoevsky.
Like instead of the...
Dostoevsky.
Like, instead of them being the bad guy meeting club, it's the book club with Ralph, Sam Bison, Sonic, Zangief, Satine. And they're talking about Dostoevsky.
And like, dualism. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. And Zangief's like, that's really profound. Well, I'm like, this is every single class with every single fucking English major.
Well, no, it was like, Zangief's like, do you think they made it set out to be an unreliable narrator? And Ralph just doesn't know. He's like, yes and no. And like everyone's silent. And just Sonic, of all people, turned like, duality. Awesome. It's like, that's coming from Sonic the fucking Hedgehog. Again, he's way past
that's a
cool.
That's a very complicated joke.
And
like, you again, have to be.
It's the English major joke.
Yeah, you have to be like in it. Had to have had a class where you had to analyze something.
Well, and it is one of those things. Like, that was definitely a joke for like adults, people who've gone through English class, because. Of course, in the theater, it's a Disney movie, there's kids.
Mm-hmm.
None of the kids laugh, but you hear all the adults laugh. I'm like, ha.
There were no kids when we went to the movie. We went on Thanksgiving night. It was just all adults and teenagers.
And I will say, one of the greatest little things that I don't think a lot of people noticed is when the stormtroopers are chasing Vanellope, and one of them falls over, they put in a Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, he gets shipped out in an ad, which is a big part of the film. Because, yeah, the wheel and whatnot. Keegan-Michael Key, I think, was in the film. I think he was, he's from one of those really, dark web troll websites. It's hey, earn money, play video games.
No, that was,
let me look it up. It wasn't Keegan-Michael Key.
No, it was He Who Likes to Flatline and Popstar.
Bill Hader.
Yes.
Got it.
Ow. Yeah, Bill Hader was the pop-up ad.
Was there a Twitch reference anywhere?
Surprisingly, no. There is a couple Fortnite ones.
Yeah,
what do you have Fortnite in there, but not Twitch?
And, of course, all the fucking little kids, when it's BuzzTube was the one they were on, and they're flipping through clips, we got gaming clips, and it shows the bus from Fortnite, and I hear these kids, and they're like, oh my god, it's Fortnite! Shut up, you little shit. And then when it gets to the Disneyland, I'm like, oh, Stormtroopers! Buzz Lightyear, voiced actually by Tim Allen.
Yeah, it was Bill Hader voicing J.P. Spamley.
Yeah, and then they had Groot in there, and my question was now did they actually bring Vin Diesel in? Because he's listed in the credits as Vin Diesel. Did they bring him in, or did they just take one of his 1,000 lines from Guardians of the Galaxy where he says, I am Groot, and put that?
Yeah, it was one of those question generators. There was a couple people, streamers and whatnot that came in, or YouTube personalities.
Yeah, they had Miranda Sings for 5 seconds.
And Mindy Kaling, no, she's not in the film anymore. She was Taffeta, and then she got replaced by Melissa Villaseñor. Jennifer Hale's in the film. She's nice. Cinderella.
Huh.
Like Jennifer Hale is the new voice of Cinderella and some of the new Disney stuff they're doing, but they have someone else doing the singing.
Yeah. Still an interesting choice.
Right.
Jennifer Hale, I like Jennifer Hale, but she has a very distinct voice. A certain range.
Yeah, they weren't allowed they wanted to use Mario again, but they couldn't for whatever reason, and the filmmakers also wanted to have Kylo Ren be in the film, acting like a spoiled child, but Lucasfilm said no to that one. Stanley was there. Imagine Dragons was in the film, in the film.
Well, they did the theme song for it too, so
yeah,
makes sense.
They sound so different. I'm trying to find.
They're very poppy now.
Yeah, they're super poppy.
They did have some very nice details, in all of the arcade machines. When they went into Tapper, every character's movements in there were very jagged and something that would belong to a pixelated arcade cabinet character. Which is a very nice touch of mm-hmm. anytime Tapper would turn his head, it'd just be the head suddenly jerks over, it's moving the pixels. It's very nice small touches that made the movie a little better.
I feel like that's what those specifically Wreck-It Ralph has always done well. It's the very nice little touches that it's you didn't have to do any of that, but it's cool that you did. You made it better.
Yeah. It does make me wonder if, they continue to milk the series. It's kind of the same vein of us talking about Toy Story 4. It's it didn't need to happen, but it's not targeted to us anymore. I don't know, man.
And the mid-credit scene was the best.
Oh, with Baby Mo?
With the bunnies and...
Yeah, Baby Mo. They actually... Oh. So you know the scene from the trailer?
Yes.
That was the bunny? The creators of the film actually named those characters based on... Because everyone's wow, that kid looks like Baby Moana. So they actually just named her Baby Mo in the credits. And it was just they're very self-aware of what they were doing, and it was really entertaining.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Entertaining. Go watch it over Fantastic Beasts.
Go watch whatever you want to watch.
No.
I put my recommendation on both movies.
There can only be one. All right. Electric Warriors came out. Steve Orlando and Travel Foreman's new series. It's a 6-issue mini that's supposed to bridge the gap between Commandi and the Legion of Superheroes. Basically, there's a thing called the Electric Seed, which has been divided between the humans and the animals on Earth. And at this point in time, like, superheroes, the world of supers is like a myth. It's a legend. They talk about Kal-El Superman, not Clark Kent, not Superman. They just say Kal-El. And it's like, oh, man, we heard that Kal-El's cape is with the humans. So basically, these electric warriors had to go up against each other in gladiatorial combat. It's a really interesting series. For being one issue in, it's very, like, Hunger Games-esque. It's a story between two brothers and then an alien squid.
Huh.
I dug the first issue. Hi-Fi did the colors. So I really, like, if you've seen Travel Foreman's art before, it's really gritty and, like, kind of scratchy. Like, think Animal Man in the New 52.
Okay.
Or Travel Foreman also did some Spider-Man for a while. But, like, with Hi-Fi's colors, it's very, like, neon lights. I just read everything Steve Orlando writes. It's a very interesting premise. It's kind of predictable in that sense, and it's exposition heavy. But for being a 6-issue mini, it's kind of obvious it has to be there.
You kind of need that.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where the story goes. Because, again, I love Commandi. I love the Legion of Superheroes. So where do we get that balance in between? So, yeah. And that brings us to Mr. Miracle number 12, the final recommendation, the final issue of a series. So, Zach.
Darkseid is. But so are we.
So, what do you think of the final issue?
It's very complicated. Like, I'm still not entirely sure of where Mr. Miracle landed.
He's dead. The entire time.
Okay. That's kind of what I guessed.
So when he...
But at the same time, it sounded like he traveled between heaven and hell and escaped both of them, but decided to stay in between them.
Yeah. So from what I was reading up on it, God, I can't find my thing about it. I took notes. I also posted on Reddit my thoughts about it. I was that guy. So Mr. Miracle was dead the entire time. In the second to last issue, in issue 11, he kills Darkseid.
Yes.
And the whole premise behind that was when Metron was coming out and says, you did it. You conquered the anti-life equation. And the whole premise there being like, you can return to life. You can come back after killing yourself. And Miracle says no. He wants to live in his afterlife. And between all the other characters, Ambush Bug, Orion telling him, oh, you're in purgatory. Oh, you're in hell. Oh, you're in heaven. It's none of the above. He's just in an afterlife. And he kind of goes on. Yeah, he just exists. And it's kind of the vein of like, are you happy in this life? Because if you return to the real world, you'd give up Barda. You'd give up Jacob. You give up your other child. That's why we don't see any other superheroes, because this exists on its own plane. That's why Batman's only a character. Or, you know, Funky being the Stan Lee XP playing such a big role.
I did love that line of great power comes great possibility.
Yeah. I think the series started off really strong in the first six and then kind of tapered a bit because you had to build up to that ending, which was very, you know, just like, how does this all fit in? How does it all exist? So Scott's been dead the entire time, and the entire story is about him trying to escape. He defeated Darkseid, beat Death, but then stayed because of his Death family. Scott killed himself because he was affected by the anti-life, and at the end, Scott stays, but he hints that he can leave and return whenever he wants. That's the whole, like, him sitting on the couch with Barda.
Yeah, he's found the escape, but he doesn't want to.
Yeah, so it's... the entire story is about escapism. That's the capstone of the story. That's when I'm busting out my English major. Scott has lived a terrible life, one that was shaped by a never-ending war, and in attempting suicide, he found himself in a fiction that was more appealing to him than the cruel and unforgiving real world. But even more, it's not an ideal fiction. He's not just living out a happy domestic life. All of his problems from the real world followed him into the fake one, but it's this world that he's able to triumph over them, ultimately being the reason why he stayed. He becomes High Father, defeats Darkseid, and the people that shaped his miserable life are out of the picture. Even his guilt over his attempted suicide manifests itself as just another obstacle that he is able to overcome. And that's the thing about fiction. It's become very alluring when we see elements of reality reflected in it. Scott rejects the real world and chooses fiction because in his mind he earned his happy ending. He suffered through too much of it and wanted to just live in that real world. His new real world. So yeah. And I think one of the more profound things too was the Jack Kirby like remembrance page.
Is that the first one of the issue?
It's the scene where Scott is sitting at that desk asking what is the fourth world?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it. Someone on Reddit explained it way better than I did, or I would.
So, okay. So pretty much like all of every like image of him seeing those other people is them like trying to, are they more or less, they're trying to convince him to leave, like saying pretty you can much. Leave at any point. Mm-hmm. Why
that's
aren't
why you? Oberon is there, Ambush Bug, Orion. It's like, you can come back.
And that's why he's like telling them fuck off. Like, yeah. No, I want to stay here.
And because of Grant Morrison and his multiversity, like I had to read up again, both Apocalypse and the World of the New Gods take place in their own plane separate mm-hmm. from the 52 worlds. So the Scott Free that we saw in Darkseid War may only be a projection of this current version of Scott Free. Even the Scott Free on Earth 2 might be different. It's a really weird thing because even though they explain that Darkseid exists across all of the multiverse, it's the same Darkseid.
Yeah, there's only one.
But you can't kill, like, the original foundation of the new god. It's very much Platonian in that sense. That's why it was kind of a big deal that Orion died in Final Crisis, but then came back almost immediately because the fourth world brought him back.
Mm-hmm.
So on the page of Scott sitting there, and the son asks, what is the fourth world? And the father said, the first world is the old world, the world of my parents from which they fled. The second world is the new world, which they sought, which they found, where I came to be. The third world is our world as it is now, in mankind, the future being. And the fourth world, my child, that is my world, the world I see when I close my eyes. So the entire thing, Scott is living in his fourth world. It's the fiction that he's developed, that he's able to overcome everything and exist happily. He's not living in the third world. This is the world he closes his eyes in. And this entire thing is an allusion to Jack Kirby's life. So the first world, his parents were Austrian Jewish immigrants who fled to America. The second world is the United States, where Jack's parents created a new life and where he was born. The third world is our reality and the planet it is today, growing as time passes. And the fourth world is the world of dreams and imagination, where Jack came up with all of his characters.
Wow.
So
that's
like
fucking cool.
It's just such a solid end note for that series to exist in. And I guess Tom King was able to ask Jack Kirby when he was still alive to explain the fourth world. And that was kind of the basic premise that Kirby gave him. So it's killer in the sense of like, here's a nice little capstone to everything. This is its own isolated story because Cecil Castellucci is going to be writing a Fury series that has nothing to do with this.
And there's going to be a sequel to this?
There's not. So the last panel, it was like, the series will not be continued again, is the same last panel of the original Mr. Miracle series. So both the first page and the last page is the same exact dialogue as the original Mr. Miracle series. Yep.
Wow.
So
the whole like dark side is, but so are we.
No, not that part.
Oh, literally just the last panel.
No, the first page and last page. It's like, oh, will Mr. Miracle escape this? I was writing the old-timey voice. The narration boxes is the same as the original Mr. Miracle series.
Oh, wow.
Not the actual dialogue.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty freaking sweet. Crap, where's the last thing? And again, it's the entire thing being the antithesis of real-world anxiety turning into a superhero series. Right?
Yeah. That's where it started, right?
And I think that's where they ended. It's like, when we exist in our reality, we are worried about all the constant shit in our lives, all the anxieties. But when we close our eyes and imagine, that's the perfection where we're able to overcome all those obstacles.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. Proposing like such a complicated theme and idea. It was always like a question of like, how does he end this? Like where, like, I don't know if we could have a better ending.
Yeah.
Because it's very complicated with everything that's alluded and like just trying to wrap it, everything up into this one final, this is how the story ends.
Yep. It ends and Scott's happy, but he can leave whenever he wants and come back to this existence whenever he wants because it's his fourth world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like sitting there. Again, I took notes because I had to like bust out my English major theories and just like, fuck, how do I read this? God damn it, Tom King. And I'm sure there's people on Reddit that probably could have explained it better than I did. So, you know, I loved it. I think it would, it all does read a lot better in a single sitting. When I read it again for like the second time, I busted out all 12 issues and had to go through them again just to finally encapsulate everything, I suppose.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you gotta like, a lot of things that they bring back from the very first few issues of just proposing, like even the thought of, is he dead? Like, do we know if he lived?
Just the fact that like the first issue is like, Barta, what color are your eyes? And they change from that point on in the rest of the series.
I don't know if you noticed it, but in the scene where he's shaving, that like his eyes are two different colors. I'm just like, huh, okay. So literally, like, that's him, like, he can change any aspect about him that he wants.
Yep, because it's his imagination.
It's so fucking weird. It's a trip. It's really cool.
Yeah, I really like Tom King doing minis, just because it's very much like...
It's like, I'm going to explore this complex idea and see how it goes.
A part of me dislikes the fact that everything Tom King writes just explores trauma, and it's like... All right, so trauma of the outside world is Mr. Miracle. Trauma of your home domestic life is Vision. Trauma of, like, your own personal insecurities is Omega Man. It's just, like, you have such a solid shtick. But I think, beyond anything else, Vision was, like, his best landing. Because that series, page one, last issue, page 12, was perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I liked it, though.
Yeah, it's a very good series. It's very complicated. I feel like it's the best way to put it, but it's, again, one of those series that once you finally figure out the pieces, like, it's just a really cool, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's just that one page about the fourth world was, like, the most important page. It was, like, the key to unlocking all of those other little threads. It was neat. And even Scott growing his beard the entire time. Like, I love that aspect just to show that time passes. Because if you think about it, like, in this world, the only other superheroes we see are Booster and Ted.
Yeah.
And even then, they're not superheroes. They're Scott's drinking buddies.
The thing they allude that they're still heroes, though, because Skeets is there.
Yeah. But Skeets is a villain, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, the next Tom King, Mitch Jarrett's duo story. I think Mitch Jarrett's is doing a one shot, or not one shot. He's doing an issue of Heroes in Crisis with Tom King in February. Yeah. And Tom King's also not writing Batman in February. It's Joshua Williamson.
Taking a break.
He's doing a super secret TV project. Sheriff of Babylon TV. Crossing my fingers.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Can only help, right?
Yeah. Steve, you have anything to say?
I haven't read like the last half of the series, so not really.
If you think about the lens of what I just said, because I know you tuned me out, everything will be understood.
I heard I got a majority of it.
Dark side is, but so are we.
Yeah. Because that's anxiety.
All right. So I do. Yeah. Yeah, I keep going back to the line just because I feel like it has so much weight to like summarize everything. It's like, yeah, Darkseid, Darkseid is essentially the, like you said, the analogy for anxiety. It's like, yeah, we have it, but we still exist and we can kind of create our own world if we need to fight it.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a great amount of cameos in the first page.
Yeah.
The how did this get made trio. And since posting that, I was like, I've been watching.
Is it just all of his podcasts. Critics?
They're not even critics. They're like, how did this get made? Are podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason, Adrian Pimento, and all of them. So like Mitch Jarrett listens to them and that while he was drawing. Jim Lee's there, and so is Dan Didio. I think Gerard Way and Nick Darrington were there because they were working on Doom Patrol, and Nick Darrington did the A covers.
Right.
I don't know who else is in it. Trying to think. Joelle Jones is in it. Adam Scott possibly is on it. Clayton Cowles, Jamie Rich, Brittany Holzer, who are all part of the creative publishing team, and they get thanked in that page.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Neat.
Think and then Scott Aukerman. Shauna and Julie Benson, maybe. I'm just looking at Reddit.
Okay.
Oh, no. Mr. Jerry says it's not them. Okay. Cool. That's all.
Woo.
Go team. Wait, is that Scott Snyder? No, that's not Scott Snyder. Okay. Well, I think that's everything.
Yeah.
Are we all good? Steve, how's Power Rangers?
It's good.
Do you want to talk about it? Torture Zach?
It's a mobile game. You get Power Rangers. Collect them. It's a gacha game. It's
like all mobile games are.
Gotcha. Pokemon Go is going really well, guys. Currently hatching five different eggs.
It's Pokemon going well.
When I get farther in Eevee, I'll talk about that.
Yeah. All right.
So thank you guys for listening to your brand new episode. And stuff. Make your own informed opinions about things. You don't always have to listen to us, but if you want to talk about it, you can talk about it with us by messaging us either on the Facebook, the Twitter, or the
z2podcast.com/comment.
And we will read your stuff on air and talk about it with you, like so many others have, like Brendan Kreese. You should check out his art on Facebook. Tim Husky of Aggravated Art.
Who?
Well, Tim Husky also replied, and so did him.
That's right.
Tusky.
Yeah. Roberto,
who's been messaging us about the mechanics of a podcast. Roberto, this is one of those weeks where there is jack shit to talk about, so we had to fly by the handle. I think that's everything.
Yeah.
All right, make sure you tell a friend and have them tell a friend and like our stuff on Facebook, Twitter, and whatever else, because that helps us get our visibility up, and we love you, internets.
Go build some gunpla.
Bye-bye.